the weight loss hormones, leptin, ghrelin, thyroid, what's it all about? Plus, Kirstie Alley is peddling yet another diet. All this and more today on episode 94 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio. Jeff, we're going to start our summer schedule a little early this year. And why don't you tell everybody what else is going on?
Well, we've been madly working on our Fat to Fit Radio anthology book that we're trying to have released before the start of summer. And what we're looking at doing is having approximately our top 50 topics that we've talked about in the last 3 years and our top 50 most popular questions that people have been asking us, and put it in one large anthology where people can flip through, because we know that not everyone listens to podcasts, but in a book form, if you're trying to tell someone about the show and there's all these good things you want to tell them, well, here's a book that has everything we've been talking about, all of our wisdom, all of our philosophy laid out for you.
Right, and if you need a quick reference, instead of having to, you know, page through multiple pages on the website or having to listen and try to remember what show did they talk about that, well, there'll be a nice index, table of contents, where you can go to and just look up that information in a quick, easy format.
That's right. When we hit show number 92, I realized that we had 674 pages of show notes. That's the research that we've done for all of the shows. Every show is written out with research and things that we want to talk about. And we realized we pretty much have an entire book here. So why not? Let's put it in a nice format that people can flip through and get all of our information.
So again, that'll be coming out right around the beginning of the summer. So we'll have more information as we go forward. Just look forward to that.
But the news is right now, we're going to start the summer schedule a little bit earlier so we can have more time to work on the book. So that means you'll see new shows every 2 weeks on Wednesdays.
So Jeff, enough about the future. Let's get into this topic and let's get on with my weigh-in for this week. My goodness, let's get going. I weighed in today at 218 pounds and I am down 1.3 pounds from the last show.
Well, that's great. That's another new record for you.
Yeah, I'm going to go over my goals here. Eating was an 8 out of 10. I'm going to say exercise, probably a 6 out of 10. Been very busy at work. Haven't had as much time to exercise as I would like. And overall, my motivation for the week, probably a 4 out of 10, just because it's just stress and things and are happening and it's getting me a little bit down, but, you know, 4 out of 10.
Well, you're still getting the numbers coming in, so I think you're going to do fine, like I've been saying the last couple weeks.
Yeah, the weight's going to come off here eventually, but, you know, let's get into our email and comments, shall we? And our first email is from listener Terry.
And she wrote, "Hi, Russ and Jeff. I found your podcast on iTunes, and I've been listening to them from the beginning on my hour-long commute to work and back every day. I just finished show number 79. Your weight loss attitude is exactly what I need to get these pounds off me once and for all. I am a 52-year-old woman. I weigh 178 pounds and stand 5'2". A couple years ago, and about 20 more pounds ago, my doctor told me that I was borderline diabetic and told me I had to control my blood sugar or risk becoming a full-blown diabetic. I immediately made changes to my diet and started a walking program while tracking my blood sugar. In 3 months, I lost 30 pounds and got my blood sugar under control. Soon after this, I started developing gallbladder problems and had to have my gallbladder removed in November of last year. That's when the weight started to come back on. After the surgery, I found I could eat so many things I couldn't eat before because they caused such an awful abdominal pain. Now I want to get back in control. Thanks to your podcast, I'm trying to eat like the thin, healthy person I want to become. I'm starting a varied exercise program that includes strength training and various forms of cardio. I've also gotten into WeFit, which I know is not a complete exercise program, but it's better choice to do recreationally than watch TV.
One of my goals is to run a 5K race. I was inspired by Russ's participation in the Turkey Trot and his recommendation of the book, Born to Run. I loved it. I'd love to know more about 4-foot running and what Russ thinks of the Vibram shoes. I've read some things on the internet, and I've been doing a lot of my workouts barefoot, except I haven't tried running barefoot. Too cold right now. Can you give me some tips and ideas where I can find the right instruction?
Well, you know, Terry, you are the type of person that I'm sure will be successful with your weight loss in the long run. You're making good choices right now, and in the long run, that's all that really matters. My wife is a pharmacist, and I hear all the time how people just want drugs to help them deal with high blood pressure and diabetes that is caused by being overweight. Most people just want to treat the symptoms of obesity and don't want to take the responsibility for their own health and work on the real causes of their health problems. And I think there's really two possible things that people do when their doctor warns them that they're about to become a diabetic. They either take the drug route, which usually turns them into taking more and more drugs as their health deteriorates and their weight continues to go up. And these types of people, if they finally decide to lose weight like their doctor has told them to, they look for weight loss drugs and supplements instead of just sucking it up and changing their lifestyle to a healthier one. It's great that you didn't try to go for the easy way out. The successful people simply accept the fact that they can make themselves healthy simply by changing to a healthy lifestyle. So good job.
Now first, awesome that you're taking up running. I can't say enough good things about 4-foot running. After just 4 weeks using a typical heel strike running technique, my knee gave out and I had to give up my running aspirations. Now after switching to a 4-foot technique, I not only ran the 5K distance, I did it with no pain in the knees, feet, or any other joint involved. Now when I ran the 5K, I just used my regular design running shoes. I believe they're called Beasts. They're made by Brooks. The more I read up on 4-foot running, the more that I believe that the shoe makes no difference. The only difference is the rake of the shoe. That is, the higher the heel, the worse for running with the 4-foot technique. Most running shoes are made with a thick heel with the assumption that you're going to be landing on your heel with each step in your stride. The thick heels are trying to protect and cushion your joints. When you 4-foot run, you don't need that heel protection, so a more neutral heel, something like you had seen in the early 80s, Reeboks, would be more appropriate. Now, you mentioned the Vibram shoes, the Five Fingers variety, I'm assuming. You can use those. They are, in my mind, a little bit gimmicky, but they absolutely force you to run in a 4-foot style because there's almost zero heel protection. You'd pound yourself to death inside of a mile heel striking with the Five Fingers. Now, the other big shoe in this space are the Newtons. They're big in the triathlete market and are specifically designed for 4-foot runners. Price-wise, the Five Fingers are about $85, and the Newtons, though, are average about $150, quite a bit more. Now, I'll have some links in the show notes to some videos and websites where you can get more information, but, you know, I think that 4-foot technique is the way to go.
That's right. I've been running that way for about 3 months now. And for about the first 6 weeks, my calf muscles were really sore. And all that I'm really trying to do is be very conscious of not hitting my heel on the ground. So I've shortened my stride and I'm just more running on the balls of my feet. And I'm running farther and pain-free. I'm not having knee problems. I'm not having shin problems. It seems to be working for me. So I would suggest people give it a try.
Yeah, that's one thing that you don't hear is your legs are much more engaged when you're using a 4-foot running technique. When you're using a heel strike, it kind of like your legs or the muscles aren't really engaged. It's kind of just, they're just moving forward. When you're using a 4-foot, you mean your calves and your thighs, everything's engaged. And it's much more, I'd say much more athletic style of running.
Well, let's move on to our second item. And this one came in from Ammon Paul.
He wrote here, "Hi guys, I've been enjoying the show for the last couple of months and have learned a great deal. But there's one thing that has been bothering me. Most of my relatives are all heavy. And I have been heavy all of my life. Many of us have tried many times to lose weight, and we have all been able to lose 20 or 30 pounds, but we have all gained back that weight. How much of our obesity is caused from our genes? Is it reasonable to even try to lose weight if our genes are just going to make us fat?"
Well, that is a good question, and we have heard it quite a few times lately, but I'm going to start off by asking you a question. I've said this on a couple shows, but if you and your entire family were in a plane crash and ended up being stranded on a desert island where there was very little to eat, what would everyone look like if you were rescued 5 years later? Of course, everyone would be much thinner. Even all of your relatives that say no matter what they do, they just can't lose any weight, they would all be much thinner. There's no question that people are differently genetically. Things like hair color, height, shoe size, and hairiness are clearly obvious. People also have different body types. Some people are naturally more muscular, some are thinner, and others naturally have higher body fat levels. Certain characteristics you're born with, such as your eye color. There's nothing that you can do about your eye color. You can wear colored contacts to cover over your true eye color, but you can't change your genes. Now, many of our genes have to interact with our environment to be expressed. This is the nurture versus nature reality. For example, let's take heart disease. Your doctor will often ask you about your family's history of heart disease. Your doctor will ask you this to find out if you have bad genes regarding heart disease. If it turns out that all of your relatives have suffered from heart disease, that doesn't mean that you will die from heart disease. that only means that you'll have a higher potential to suffer from heart disease. Your lifestyle will have a greater impact on the chances of you dying from it. If you live an unhealthy lifestyle and eat poorly, the chances are much higher than the general population that you will develop heart disease. If you live a healthy lifestyle, your chances might not be any greater than the general population. The point is, just because your grandparents died from heart attacks when they were in their 40s isn't a guarantee that you will as well. If you eat healthy, make sure that you keep your weight and blood pressure under control, the chances are extremely high that you will live into your 70s. Now, why I'm saying all of this is because the same thing is true with your chances of becoming obese. You may have a predisposition to have more body fat, but it is the combination of your environment that will make you fat. Some people have an easier time gaining fat than others, but that does not mean that you are destined to be fat. Your lifestyle choices, what you choose to eat, and the level of physical activity that you choose to do will have a much greater impact on obesity than just your genes. There is not a single person in the world who weighs 400 pounds right now who does not eat more food than a 150-pound person. That 400-pound person may have an easier time gaining fat, but they are still choosing to eat many more calories on average every single day to get there.
Well, good. I don't think you've left any loopholes there, Jeff. Let's get into our third email, and it is from Beck, and she wrote, "I'm a dedicated fan and have been listening and inspired by you guys since forever. Thanks to all your down-to-earth, sensible advice, I have managed to maintain my 60-kilogram, that's 130 pounds to us Yanks here, loss for over 2 years. Quick question for you. I know that to maintain my weight, I need to balance my workout, caloric burn, and caloric intake. But does this have to be on a daily basis, or can I balance it over a week? The concern I have is that I have started a new job, and my working and free hours have been altered. I generally work out 4 to 5 times a week, doing a range of activities, but now find that I don't have as much time during the week. I want to know, can I bank workout hours over the weekend to make up for a lack of time during the week? For example, if I do 4 hours of exercise over the weekend, and 1 hour, say, on Wednesday, is that the same as doing an hour a day on 5 days? Would this still meet the burn intake balance because essentially I have completed 5 hours of exercise over the week just in different time slots?" Well, Jeff, before you get into the technical side of this, I want to say just, wow, great job on keeping off that 130 pounds for 2 years. Now, statistically speaking, you've done better than probably like 97% of the people who have lost weight just by going on a regular diet plan. And that's awesome. Now, it sounds like you're being very vigilant and doing everything right in your new lifestyle to make sure that that weight doesn't creep back on. That's great. Now, you know exactly what you should be eating and how much you should be exercising to be where you are today. Yeah, now with this new job, it must be scary when you have to change things when you have been so successful in that old, you know, regimen.
Now, on to your question. We get similar questions like this all the time, but I always break them down the same way. So first of all, there's the technical side where weight gain or loss is all about the calories in, calories out balance over several days or even a week. On paper, things work out, but in real life, when things are taken to extremes, they don't. So technically, you can run 2 marathons on a Saturday and burn off around 7,000 calories running those 52 miles just in 1 day. Or you could do the same thing just by walking for half an hour each day for a month. The problem that happens is that you get diminishing returns the longer that the workout is. Now, by doing this, this might work out for you to keep you at your goal weight, but are you really willing to do this much work every weekend in the long run? You are maintaining your weight after all right now, and by living the lifestyle of that thinner person, what you really have to do is embrace the lifestyle. Do people of your same size and shape have to do 4-hour workouts on the weekend to maintain their weight? Well, probably not. It really shouldn't be this hard at your goal weight. You've worked so hard. Now you just have to really embrace the lifestyle. I'm not saying to stop being mindful of what you're eating every single day and making sure that your weight doesn't start to slowly creep up, but I'm just saying to live the healthiest lifestyle you can given your new current situation. Now, if you enjoy extra activity on the weekend, keep it up and see how it goes. You could also try very short but intense workouts during the week if you don't have a lot of time. You know, interval training usually only lasts up to 20 minutes, and you'll still get that afterburn effect. And it is awesome for improving your cardio. You could also look to more ways to increase your activity every single day. And if it really comes down to it, You just might have to adjust your calories down a little bit if you can't get in all of the exercise that you'd like to. It is a new situation, like I was saying. Just keep tracking your results and change things around as needed, and you'll be fine.
All right. I want to thank Terry and Amon Paul and Beck for their questions. Thank you very much. If you'd like to get your comment or question to us, there are a few ways you can do that. The first one is by leaving a comment on the website at fattofitradio.com.
Or you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is to leave a voicemail by clicking on the Call Me button over on the website, fattofitradio.com.
Or you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
Well, it's time to get into a couple news items on our glorious web report. Jeff, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to have to admit that I watched that new Kirstie Alley's Big Life show. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it, but it intrigued me. What was it all about?
Well, I unfortunately watched the premiere, and it was two episodes back to back. Now, if anyone doesn't know who Kirstie Alley is, she was Jenny Craig's spokesperson for a few years. She kept her weight off for these 2 years, but as soon as she stopped being Jenny Craig's spokesperson, she quickly gained back 90 pounds. Now, her new reality show is about following her as she loses her weight yet again. Now, there's a couple of things that I want to say. First of all, she clearly hasn't learned anything from being on Jenny Craig, which, to be honest, really isn't that surprising because it's really just a program of packaged foods and not any sort of lifestyle change. She has no idea about living the life of that thinner person she wants to become. She is either on a diet or she is totally out of control with her eating. I watch the show and I can see how people can find her entertaining, even though everything that she does seems to be very staged for the show and it's highly edited. But I mean, that's the nature of these reality shows, or scripted reality shows, like I call them. I was watching the show to see if she was ever going to address why she gained so much weight so quickly. And she never does, just in case you're wondering. She just keeps complaining about how unhappy she is with being fat. You can see that in her house, she has all of the weights and fitness equipment that she could ever use. But most of these first two shows is her trying to find a personal trainer. I have the feeling that she knows how to work out. There's other problems here. But here is my big issue with the show. Kirstie Alley is now my official definition of someone selling out to the diet industry. She was using her celebrity to earn a living off of being the Jenny Craig spokesperson, but now she's jumping into bed with yet another diet program. And let's just say that if you listen back to all of our shows where we've mentioned about all of the bad characteristics of these crap diets, the one that she is now promoting nails all of them. On her personal website, if you go to kirstiealley.com, there is nothing there about her anymore. It's totally stripped away anything personal. It is now all a big sales site where she's peddling a weight loss program full of supplements that are magically going to make you not hungry and are so good that losing weight and keeping it off will be really easy for everyone now. She is so happy that she discovered it, she said on this site, because this will now be the last diet that she will ever have to be on. And she says on her website, and this is really pathetic, she says that over the last 2 years, while she was gaining 90 pounds, she has been busy researching and helping to create this new diet program. Then, just by chance, she gets this new reality show that will track her while she loses weight. How convenient. Her new diet program that she's been creating over the last 2 years is finally ready, and now you can watch her eating her special supplements and losing weight on TV. I mean, this is nothing more than a really disguised infomercial for her new diet program, and I'm just calling BS here. She is clearly a typical yo-yo dieter who is claiming that if she only found the right program, she could keep her weight off forever. So now she's jumped into bed with a company that is selling yet another diet plan full of expensive, useless supplements and is using her star power to promote it. And I think that's just really sad. I mean, she has totally sold herself out. And of all of the people in the world who should know that diet programs like this are total garbage based on her history with diets, this is really disgraceful for her. So the show was interesting if you want to watch it to see what Kirstie Alley is really like. But really, this is just a big infomercial in disguise.
You know, so many years ago when she went on the Oprah show and then basically, you know, flashed us and wore like a body stocking and wore kind of, it was a bikini basically. and showing like, oh, look, I've lost all this weight. And this was back when she was Dawn the Jenny Craig. I kind of wrote her off that, you know, this is just, she's just sensationalizing this this weight loss. And kind of like Oprah did on previous shows, like pulling out a wagon full of fat. And, you know, I just kind of wrote her off as far as, you know, having any real information or anything important to say about weight loss at that point.
Well, she was clearly just doing her job for Jenny Craig. They were paying her per pound or per week, however they were paying her. And I'm sure she got paid a lot of extra money to go on the Oprah show to show her weight loss. And then when, you know, Jenny Craig dumped her, all the weight came back on. And she's thinking, well, I made so much money on Jenny Craig. Why don't I come out with my own program and make 100% of the profits for myself? And people will believe her just because she's a celebrity. And I think it's just pathetic.
Add to that the fact that she's, you know, she was an actress. She's not really an actress anymore. I mean, she's just using like any other of these faux celebrities and using the fact that she was famous at one point, you know, for being an actress to propel her, you know, into making more money in these reality shows. And it's just sad.
Let's move off from celebrity and let's get into the meat. What do you have for us this week, Russ?
Well, I have an article here. It's over on MSNBC.com. And it says here, sitting down, experts say, it'll kill you. Spending days on your behind is hazardous, even if you regularly exercise. Now, this was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine. It was by a guy at the Swedish School of Sports and Health Sciences. He found here that even if you exercise regularly, sitting down for prolonged periods of time could be bad for your health. It doesn't matter where your sitting takes place, if it's at a school or office or in the car or whatever it is, it's the overall number of hours in which you're sitting. So if you're sitting at your desk for 8 hours a day, which I have to say I am, then that is going to be one of the worst things for you. Now, it says here, after hours of sitting, the body starts to send harmful signals to the rest of the body. The genes regulating the amount of glucose and fat in the body start to shut down. It was noted here that this physical activity expert at the World Health Organization said that people who exercise every day but still spend a lot of time sitting might get more benefit if the exercise were spread across the day rather than just a single time, say, after work. So, yeah, so it's bad sitting for long periods of time. So if you are at work and have a chance to get up and say for your break, you can go get a coffee or you can, say, walk around the block. Better to walk around the block. Just take 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and get your heart moving a little bit. That's going to be overall better for your health just because it keeps your body from going into this kind of a hibernative state during the day.
That's right. I can't imagine what it was like 150 years ago when people were doing manual labor. They were probably eating 3,000-4,000 calories a day, and no one was overweight because they had such demanding jobs, and just living was so much harder back then. For the amount of calories that we're burning, we're pretty much sleeping throughout the day. So it's so important of what you're eating and getting in extra exercise.
A little bit of added activity during the day will do you a large amount of good.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on to our feature section. And today we are talking about all of the weight loss hormones.
Well, that's right. While looking for a topic this week, I asked my wife what she might like to hear about if she listened to the show. She replied almost immediately, what about leptin and ghrelin? I gave her a response something like, yeah, all right, wondering where that came from. Of course, later that day, I saw the Doctor's Oz and Roizen book, You on a Diet, on her nightstand. Now, I think that my wife is still in denial that the best way to lose that fat around the middle is to move her body. She will walk a couple times a week or turn on the TV and do a workout DVD once in a while. But I think that overall, she's still waiting for that elusive magic pill, that thing that will magically melt away fat and return her to former glory. When she read about leptin and ghrelin in the book, I have to say it probably triggered her magic sense. So, leptin and ghrelin first. So what is leptin? What do the You on a Diet doctors and others say about these two hormones? Well, first off, the book says that leptin is a protein secreted by stored fat. And the stimulation of leptin shuts off your hunger and stimulates you to burn more calories. It also goes on to say that leptin doesn't always work the way it's supposed to. Our bodies can override this response, and we get what's called leptin resistance. The book also says that obese people have high levels of leptin in their bodies, but their bodies don't receive and respond to the leptin signals, hence leptin resistance. The byproduct is that when you eat, you don't get a full filling and you keep eating. Your body is actually working against you at this point. Now, how about ghrelin? Ghrelin to me sounds like the devil of hormones. It has a two-prong approach to making you fat. That's right, two. But what is ghrelin? Ghrelin is a hormone secreted by the stomach in pulses every half hour. Now, those pulses get sent to your brain telling you to eat. If you're on a severe, low-calorie diet, ghrelin is a thing that's telling you to eat, and eventually you will. Plus, when you are in a large calorie deficit by eating an extremely small amount of food, similar to the many prevalent diets out there today, the ghrelin keeps coming fast and furious. You're more likely to reach for that unhealthy thing because your body's hormones are dying for you to eat. That's the first thing that ghrelin does. The second is probably worse. Ghrelin promotes the secretion of growth hormone. More ghrelin means more growth hormone. Now, that may seem like a good thing, particularly if you're trying to build muscle. You hear about bodybuilders taking growth hormone. But as it says here in the book, growth hormone builds you not only up, but out as well. So that growth hormone can make you gain weight as well. So before we look at how we can work with these two hormones to help us lose weight, I want to touch on a third type of hormone, the thyroid hormones, and particularly how they affect our metabolism. Now, we received a voicemail from listener Mary recently about plateaus. Now, in answering Mary's question, I came across a couple articles talking about the thyroid and metabolism, and here's what I found out. When you are eating very low calories, our bodies compensate and lower our metabolism. That's when we tend to plateau. Our bodies compensate in two ways. The first is a reduction in thyroid hormone activity, and the second is a lowering of our body's basal metabolic rate, our BMR. Now, during long-term caloric restriction, the secretion of the thyroid hormone is decreased. These hormones are the ones that regulate your metabolic rate. Now, I won't go into exactly how that works right now, but we'll have links in the show notes for you to read up on this. So the second way is the one that we talk about more often here on the show. Your long-term metabolism is lowered by the shedding of lean body mass, your muscle, to compensate for the lower number of calories that are coming in. Your muscle's broken down so you can survive on this new, lower number of calories. Now, for some good news, first in regards to the thyroid and your metabolism. If you start eating at the caloric level for your goal weight, any slowdown in the metabolism due to thyroid hormones will reverse. But in all likelihood, you will gain some weight back initially. Now, we suggest that you eat a small amount more each week over a couple of weeks to get your body used to the higher, correct number of calories. We have, as you may have heard, had many listeners that have added calories back into their diets as the result of a plateau and then started losing weight again. Now, that includes myself. For long-term repair of your metabolism, you need to train with weights, do weight-bearing exercises to build muscle. Now, let me say that again. Build muscle. That's the way you get your metabolism back. Now for the leptin and ghrelin. Now, if you were looking for a reason to eat every 3 hours like we recommend, ghrelin is the reason. If your stomach is always being used throughout the day and you're eating that correct number of calories spread out throughout those meals, ghrelin will be kept in check. That's great news. For leptin, fortunately as well, as you lose weight, your body will become more responsive and sensitive to the leptin your fat is secreting right now. And in this battle of hormones, of leptin versus ghrelin, leptin, the chemical that tells you you're full, will win out. Now, by eating those smaller, more frequent meals, your leptin levels will be kept high and you won't feel hungry. So, Jeff, I remember back many shows ago, we had a question on why you should eat many times a day. Now, I don't remember us having a totally comprehensive answer back then, but this looks like a pretty compelling reason to eat that way.
Yeah, that's right. I agree with everything that you said. And it's nice to see that the big picture lifestyle changes that we always promote here is correct when you look at the science behind it. And I also think it's pretty funny that both our wives buy diet books but have never listened to our show and would even think that we might be capable of offering them diet and fitness advice.
That's right. I could say the exact same thing in any one of these books, but I don't know anything, and they do.
Well, that's true, but at least my dogs think I'm the real man of the house. But anyways, let me go on here. I want to say a few more things about this. You see, leptin and ghrelin and thyroid hormones do have an effect on your metabolism, but they are only three hormones out of literally thousands of human hormones, and they are discovering new hormones all the time. I know many overweight people have had their thyroid levels checked to see if it was a contributing factor to their obesity, and it is possible that in a small percentage, a thyroid problem can be a contributing factor to their obesity, and those thyroid levels can be fixed through medication. As part of a regular physical from your doctor, you can get your thyroid checked out if you're worried about this. But having said that, people are interested in leptin and ghrelin, just like Russ's wife, because they hear about it on one of these pop psychology TV shows and in one of those doctorese type diet and health books. But I take a very different approach to these and other hormones. It's factual about these hormones, but I think it's useless. You see, I will never, ever bring up leptin or ghrelin when giving someone advice about losing weight or getting into shape. It might make you seem smart by some people by throwing up big words, but it will not have any positive effect on helping anyone for real. In fact, it will probably have the opposite effect. When you give people tons of little, insignificant pieces of information, what it tends to do is paralyze them from anything. Now, Russ, I know you just talked all about leptin and ghrelin and thyroid hormones, and that is factual stuff, but let me just explain a little more. We're on show number 94 right now, but I have never started blathering on about acetyl coenzyme A or glycolysis or pyruvate oxidization or even oxidative phosphorylation, and I don't think I've even mentioned adenosine triphosphate, ATP. But you know, those are all the technical terms that describe the pathway that our bodies use to turn food into energy. This is the key about losing weight, what I'm talking about. It's all about energy in versus energy out. But nobody cares to learn the chemistry. You don't have to know the biochemical pathways and those reactions to be successful at losing fat. I mean, there are dozens of enzymes in use when your body is converting carbohydrates to energy. If you have a low level of any of those enzymes, you might slow down your metabolism. One of those enzymes near the end of that cycle is malate dehydrogenase. I could factually tell people that if this single enzyme is low, you can't lose weight as fast. I could even figure out foods that could help you get more of this enzyme. I could then even create the malate dehydrogenase diet and probably get on these daytime talk shows with it. Now, I'm going on a tangent here, but if I did this, what would really happen in the real world? You know, people would start only eating whatever foods I told them about because they would start worrying about that little enzyme. They wouldn't worry about their overall caloric deficit, and they wouldn't see the need to exercise. They would simply start worrying about the smallest, insignificant piece of the puzzle because they believe that is this magic solution to obesity. Now, I know that I'm being oversimplistic, but look at what happened in the 80s when fat was considered bad. People thought they could eat as much as they wanted as long as there was not fat in what they ate. My overall point, and I'm finally coming around to it, is now that you know about these three different types of hormones that can affect your metabolism, you can chat about them to someone who has heard about them on Oprah. But that is all that it's really good for. If you simply eat a little bit less right now, don't eat a lot of processed foods, eat often throughout the day, and exercise regularly, absolutely everything else will take care of itself. Millions of chemical reactions occur in your body every single day in combination of countless hormones and enzymes, etc. So which one of these enzymes or hormones should you choose to base your entire diet plan on? Well, none of them. Should you do a leptin diet? No, it's garbage. Should you do a ghrelin diet? No, it's garbage. Losing weight and getting into shape isn't that complicated. It isn't easy for most people with their lifestyles and temptations, but it really isn't overly complicated. What we talk about every week on the show balances out your hormones and helps you lose fat in a healthy way. We're just more concerned about telling people practical things that you can do on a daily basis to get there instead of focusing on little hormones and coenzymes, etc.
So Jeff, don't hold back. Tell me how you really feel.
That's true. I was watching the Dr. Oz show, and I mentioned this to you before the show, and that really got me fired up because they were talking about things that were so oversimplified. They were asking people three questions, and these three questions would determine which diet plan they should be on for the rest of their life. And it was just absolutely ridiculous. And then when I saw you were talking about, you know, this Dr. Oz book that your wife had liked and was talking about ghrelin and leptin, yeah, I just kind of lost it here.
You know, the Dr. Oz show, it is a lot of popular science, pop sci, but I don't know that the book, if you read the book, everything about it, if you follow all his, like any other diet book, if you follow everything in the book, you're going to lose weight. But, you know, it's still a diet. You know, you need just to, like I said, calories in, calories out, move your body, and, you know, those little things like hormones will take care of themselves.
That's so true. Well, hey, let's move on to the recipe of the week.
All right, our recipe this week, I saw over on Twitter, a friend of the show, Pamela Hernandez, she's a personal trainer. She posted that she was eating some protein pancakes for Brinner. Now, I am not so cool that I knew what Brinner was. It's breakfast for dinner, one of my favorite things. And so I said, hey, post a link, and she did over on Facebook for these protein pancakes. And we'll have a link in the show notes for those. But they're basically oats, some protein powder, just some egg whites, skim milk, a little applesauce, and Yeah, they look really good, and I'm going to check these out and see if I can get the kids to eat them. But they look like they're be very good for giving that protein in the morning without actually having to eat a bunch of just eggs and oatmeal.
That's right, and I learned a new word, Brinner.
Brinner, I know. It was in the Urban Dictionary. I had to look it up. I don't know what that is. I'm pretty sure, you know, breakfast and dinner, but it was breakfast for dinner. So if you have a new term in your bag today. But Jeff, what is our homework for everyone this week?
Well, fat loss is all about making those little decisions every single day that over time add up to improving your health. The homework this week is to make intentional substitutions. The goal is to make one food substitution and one exercise substitution every single day to something that is more healthy. So for example, if you're about to order your regular sandwich and fries, substitute a garden salad for the fries. If you're about to park in the closest parking spot to the shopping center, substitute that spot for one at the back of the parking lot. Over time, these little substitutions will add up, and the more that you do, the healthier you'll become.
All right, will do. Now, what is our motivational quote for this week?
The quote comes from George Bernard Shaw, and it really applies to a lot of our listeners who've been struggling for years and years on diets and gaining weight and losing weight and gaining weight and then finally losing weight slowly. But here's the quote. A life spent in making mistakes is not only more honorable, but more useful than a life spent doing nothing.
Yeah, it's a good quote and probably applies to a lot of our listeners. So good one. Thanks. And thank you, everyone, for downloading. Thank you for listening. All those show notes will be over on the website, fattofitradio.com. Look for show number 94. And don't forget, we are also on Facebook. Facebook.com/fat2fit. We're over there talking about articles, posting links, and sharing stories about weight loss and triumphs. Also, we have a little section on there on sharing recipes. So head on over there and check that out. Meanwhile, we'll talk to you next time in 2 weeks. Don't forget, 2 weeks till the next episode. Thank you again, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.
This is the nature versus nurture. I'll try nurture first.